That a little better. Good morning. It's good to see everybody together this morning. In 1 Corinthians chapter 2, Paul said, "I determined to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified." Tyler's going to be leading us in a study of 1 Corinthians over the next few weeks, so he'll unpack this a lot more in its own context. But I want to just think about what he says there for just a second to launch into our lesson today. I determined to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ, Jesus Messiah, and Him crucified, right? The Corinthians were struggling with a crosslessness in their own walk. They had, in effect, moved away from the crucifixion of Jesus. I mean, in word, of course, they would still say Jesus died on the cross, but in their lives, in any substantial way, they weren't living like Jesus died on the cross. And so he reminds them here of his time preaching to them and said, "I determined to know nothing among you except Jesus Messiah and Him crucified." Truly the very center of the gospel, the very beating heart of the gospel, is the proclamation of a crucified King. And that had a lot more shame and scandal with it in the ancient world than it does in our day to hear of a crucified King. And it's this gospel center where I'd like to center our gaze today, the story of the Messiah crucified. The night before Jesus' death, Jesus came together with his disciples to eat the Passover. Passover was a very special meal in which the people of Israel would gather together as families to remember and to reenact the story that was at the epicenter of their identity, the Passover. God brought judgment on Pharaoh and the Egyptian gods, the slave masters that oppressed Israel in harsh and bitter slavery. God passed through the midst of Egypt, striking down every firstborn, from the firstborn of the Pharaoh who sits on the throne, to the firstborn of the slave girl, to the firstborn of all the cattle as well. God passed over Israel when he saw the blood on the doorposts. And it's this dual-edged act of salvation and judgment where God rescued and redeemed Israel from slavery, and he became their king, right? The song of Moses in Exodus 15 celebrating Yahweh's victory, and the final word is that he reigns over them. Then God brought them through the wilderness to Mount Sinai, where he called them as his own special people, a kingdom of priests and a holy nation, where he gave them the law and he entered into a covenant with them. It's this story of the Passover, this story of rescue and redemption and kingdom that frames this last Passover meal Jesus would share with his disciples and frames the events that would unfold in the hours after this meal. At the end of the meal, in keeping with the Jewish traditions of that time, Jesus and his disciples sang a hymn. Most likely it would have been from the Hallel Psalm, Psalm 115 to 118, if they were keeping the traditions at the time. After singing a hymn, Jesus and his disciples went out to the Mount of Olives, just east of Jerusalem. Jesus told his disciples, "You will all fall away from me this night, because it's written, 'I will strike down the shepherd and the sheep will scatter. But after I've been raised, I'll go ahead of you to Galilee.'" His disciples would not hear him. They all reconfirmed their allegiance to him, denying that they would ever deny him, pledging even to die before they'd ever deny him. Then Jesus came to a place called Gethsemane, and he commanded his disciples to pray. Jesus took three of his disciples, Peter, James, and John, and he told them, "My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch with me." Then he went a little beyond them and he fell on his face and he prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet not as I will, but as you will." When he returned to his disciples, he found them sleeping. And he said, "You could not keep watch with me for 1 hour? keep watching and praying that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away again a second time and prayed, My Father, if this cannot pass away unless I drink it, your will be done. And again, he came and found them sleeping. And he left them again and went and prayed a third time, saying the same thing once more. Then he came to his disciples and he said, Are you still sleeping and resting? It's time. The Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up. Let's go. The betrayer is almost here. And it was at that moment Judas, one of the 12, came up to him, accompanied by a large mob with swords and clubs sent from the Jewish leaders. Judas came up to Jesus and greeted him, Hail, Rabbi! And he kissed him. Then the mob seized him. At first, his disciples began to fight, but Jesus commanded them to lay down their swords. The scriptures must be fulfilled, and the scriptures say that it must happen this way. Then all his disciples left him, just as Jesus had said. Jesus was then led to Caiaphas, the high priest, where many of the Jewish leaders were gathered together. False witnesses came forward. The leaders wanted evidence so they could put him to death. But the false witnesses contradicted one another. So the high priest himself called Jesus under oath to admit whether he claimed to be the Christ, the Son of God. So Jesus, quoting two crucial scriptures, Psalm 110 and Daniel 7, said, You've already said, but I'll say it again. Very soon you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of God and sitting at the right hand of God with power and coming with the clouds of heaven. That was too much, or just enough, depending on how you look at it. The high priest tore his robes and he said, He's blasphemed. What further need do we have of witnesses? You've all heard the blasphemy. What do you think? They all cried out, He deserves death. Then they spat in his face, beat him with their fists, and others slapped him and mocked him. Prophesy to us, you Messiah. Who is the one who hit you? In the morning they bound him and led him away and delivered him over to Pilate the governor. They accused him of making himself out to be a king who would lead people to revolt against Caesar. Pilate questioned him, Are you the king of the Jews? Jesus answered simply, You say so. The Jewish leaders continued to hurl charges against him, but Jesus gave no answer. Pilate asked, Do you hear all the charges they're bringing against you? But Jesus did not answer a single charge. Pilate knew the Jewish leaders handed Jesus over because of envy, and Pilate's wife sent a message to him, urging him to have nothing to do with this righteous man because she'd had a nightmare about Jesus that very night. So Pilate brought a notorious prisoner named Barabbas before the crowd. It was his custom at Passover to release one prisoner for the people. Pilate said, Who do you want me to release for you? Barabbas or Jesus, who's called the Messiah? But the Jewish leaders stirred up the crowds to ask for him to release Barabbas, to put Jesus to death. Pilate said, What shall I do with Jesus, who is called the Messiah? They all said, Crucify him. Pilate, seemingly shocked, he says, Why? What evil has he done? They gave no answer. But they kept shouting all the more, Crucify him! Crucify him! Pilate, very weakly, washed his hands with water as a gesture for the people and said, I'm innocent of this man's blood. The people said, His blood shall be on us and our children. They only knew. So Pilate had Barabbas released. But Pilate had Jesus scourged and then handed him over to be crucified. They stripped Jesus naked and put a scarlet robe on him. They twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They put a reed in his right hand like a king would have a scepter. They knelt down and bowed before him and mocked him. "Hail, King of the Jews!" They spat on him. Then they took the reed and began to beat him on the head. After they finished their obscene, twisted mocking, they took off the scarlet robe, put his own clothes back on him, and led him away to crucify him. On the way to the execution site, the soldiers forced a man named Simon to carry his cross. Then they came to the execution site, a place called Golgotha, the place of the skull. They gave him wine to drink mixed with gall, but he would not drink it. Then they crucified him. And when they'd crucified him, they divided up his garments among themselves by casting lots. And sitting down, they began to keep watch over him there. And above his head, they put the charge, which is written, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." At that time, two robbers were crucified with him, one on the right and one on the left. And those passing by were hurling abuse at him, wagging their heads and saying, "You who are going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are the Son of God, come down from the cross." In the same way, the chief priests also, with the scribes and elders, were mocking and saying, "He saved others. He cannot save himself. He's the King of Israel. Let him come down from the cross and we'll believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God rescue him if he delights in him. For he said, 'I'm the Son of God.'" The robbers who'd been crucified with him were also insulting him with the same words. Now from the sixth hour, darkness fell upon the land until the ninth hour. There's never a darker moment in history. About the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice saying, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," which is, "My God, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And some of those who were standing there, when they heard it, they were saying, "This man's calling for Elijah." They didn't understand his reference. Immediately, one of them ran, taking a sponge. He filled it with sour wine and put it on a reed and gave him to drink. But the rest said, "Let's see whether Elijah will come and save him." And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. He died. And it's precisely for this reason, not incidental to, but precisely for this reason, as we've seen in our Philippian study, God highly exalted him and gave him the name which is above every name, so that at the name of Jesus, every knee will bow, those who are in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. The cross is where the holy and righteous one was disowned for a murderer. The cross is where the Prince of Life was put to death. The cross is where the powers of evil that have dominated the world gathered in full force to wage war against the Son of God and heaped up on him shame and reproach, injustice, violence, even sexual violence when we understand the means of crucifixion, and where those same powers were utterly defeated, where judgment is rendered upon this world, where the ruler of this world is cast out, where the Son of God rendered powerless him who had the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who through fear of death were subject to slavery all their lives, where he disarmed the rulers and authorities and made a public display of them, having triumphed over them, where he broke down the barrier of the dividing wall and abolished in his flesh the enmity, where he made both Jew and Gentile into one new humanity and established peace. The cross is where God hears our groaning and chooses to groan with us, where the cries of the psalmist become the cries of God himself, "My God, my God, why have you forsaken me?" The cross is where God Himself entered into our experiences. The cross is where God Himself meets us in our own sin and weakness, our shame from all that we've done, and our shame from all that's been done to us. The cross is where the nature of God is truly revealed, where the King of creation became like a child, where the last became first, where the least proved to be far and above the greatest, where the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give His life a ransom for many, where the righteousness or justice of God is revealed, where the love of God is revealed and known. The cross is where we receive mercy, where we are forgiven. The cross is where we learn to show mercy, where we learn to forgive. Just as Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing," so we too learn to say, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing." The cross is where we know love and where we learn to love. Fleming Rutledge said, "The crucifixion is the touchstone of Christian authenticity, the unique feature by which everything else, including the resurrection, is given its true significance." As I said at the very beginning, the cross is the very center of the gospel. The beating heart of the gospel is this proclamation, this story of a crucified king. I give no exhortation today except to say this: rest in Messiah crucified. I don't know where you are today in life with various struggles and what facet of the story of the crucified Messiah that you need to fix on most, but I urge you to gaze at it. What I do know is the crucifixion of the Messiah is where God took on all that was wrong in the world and where He guarantees that He will make it right. If you're with us this morning and you need our prayers for anything, any sin that's weighing you down, any shame, any weight or burden or suffering that you need prayers for and encouragement in, or just discouragement that we can come alongside and help you, we would love to do that. And if you've never given your life to Christ, never given your allegiance to Him, He's given everything for you. Would love to baptize you in His name, that you could share in His death and that you could also share in His life. If there's anything we can do for you, please come forward as we stand and sing.